You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Oh my gosh, what's going on? Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast. You know, we're all the way from New York City, and I'm Morgan Miller. I'm your host for this episode. Super excited to be here. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest today is Janie Stoller. So excited. Who improv fans might know from, you know, a lot of stuff around New York City. You also have been on the lead teams Musk, Witch, and Lisa from School.
Correct.
And is currently on the House Herald team Sleuth.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful team.
Thanks.
And you also might have seen her at the Magnet. She's been performing there. She took classes at Second City, Magnet, and at UCB.
Yeah.
And also is a contributing writer all around town, right?
Thank you so much.
No, yeah. But, yeah. She's really contributing a lot to the scene.
Thanks.
So I'm so excited to be interviewing you.
I'm so excited to be interviewed by you. I'm a big fan.
Oh, I'm a big fan of yours.
Wow.
So I guess I want to say you're from Chicago.
I'm from Chicago.
And
that's correct.
Probably get the question all the time, like, did you do a lot of comedy in Chicago? It's a big comedy hub.
Yeah.
Did you see a lot of comedy growing up?
I didn't see that much of it. I knew it was there, which is, you know, one of those, like, I feel like a Eugene Levy answer in a Christopher Guest movie was, like, I was adjacent to the comedy. I did a Second City class when I lived in Chicago, which was great. But there really wasn't a lot of exposure to improv for me growing up, aside from Whose Line Is It Anyway and Christopher Guest movies. And I didn't really know it was a thing. And then I went to college, and I was like, oh, my God, all these people know how to do this. This is weird.
So then did you do improv in college?
I didn't make the improv team.
Oh, no!
No. So shout out to, no, I'm just going to name everyone who didn't let me on. Well, that was actually interesting. I went to Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and I honestly had never seen improv like that, like long-form improv, and all these people were doing it, and I was such a big fan. And to just jump in on a team is a crazy ask of a 18-year-old. So I ended up on a sketch team, which at first I was bummed about, but then I met really great people. Two people who listeners may know from the New York comedy scene, Joe Firestone and Dylan Marin.
Oh, wow.
Who are still, you know, doing stuff.
Heavy
doing
hitters.
Great, heavy hitters. And there are a lot of other great people on that team. So I got to work with really great people, and it was just an awesome experience. So sketch ended up being what I did all through college.
So when you were doing sketch, were you guys improvising at all, or was it just purely sketch?
It was no improv. I feel like when I graduated, I still was like, I don't know how improv works. There was no exposure to it. It's still,
wow,
like, very interesting to me. I taught it at a camp, but I really shouldn't have.
Okay.
Yeah, I was, like, teaching it. I didn't even know how to do it.
Did you teach long form?
I taught short form.
Short form.
Yeah.
So have you ever done short form?
No. I Googled the games, and honestly, it was a hit. Everyone loved it.
Great. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. So you took a class in high school, didn't really do it in college.
No.
And then did you move to New York right after college?
So after college, I moved to New York for the summer after graduation, and the first day I came here, I went to UCB.
Oh, wow.
I saw Pangea 3000, which is, like, this incredible sketch group. The show they were doing was so funny, and I was blown away. I was so lucky because I'm sure, you know, most nights you're going to see amazing sketch and improv at UCB, but I just happened to see this show that was exactly what my sense of humor and so funny. So I stayed here for the summer. Then I lived in France for a year, and I moved back. And I had a lot of family problems going on, so I didn't end up really, like, going through the classes, all of them, for years. It
sort of
was like a slow burn where, like, I had to keep dropping out, or, like, I would think about it, but I wouldn't be able to really enroll. So it took me maybe, I don't know how long, I'm going to be bad at the numbers, I wanted to just go through all of them really quick. It took me probably like 6 years when I was like, I'm ready to do it the whole time. Yeah.
So do you think that was like helpful? Do you think it was like good that you went through it in 6 years or?
I think so. I think the benefit for me was I was really integrating what I was learning and slowly like developing and doing other shows and indie shows. And I knew I really wanted it. Like I was taking the time between classes to go, okay, when's my next class? I'm going to be deliberate. I'm going to pick a teacher that I've seen that I really like. And I think the benefit was that I was just able to be deliberate. But I think the detriment was that I felt like I never really got a foothold with the community, or I never felt like I was really gaining momentum as a performer. I was sort of in and out the whole time.
Right. So yeah. When did you start to feel like you were getting that foothold slash?
Like a year into Lloyd.
You really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, it took me a long time.
Wow. That's amazing. And your first Lloyd team was?
It was Musk.
Musk.
A great team.
And how long was that a team for?
Only 6 months.
Only 6 months.
Yeah, it was really interesting. The people on the team were so funny and talented, and I was so nervous the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I remember I used to listen to this podcast being like, I have a distinct memory of walking around Old Navy listening to Ben Remeka's podcast, just hoping someone would give me the thing I was missing, which was really inside myself of like, why can't I figure out how to make this good. I was so nervous, like, for so long. It was crazy.
And what kind of got you out of that nervousness?
I think it was just time and on stage, just, like, figuring it out on my own and feeling more comfortable. I think it's such a big shift to go from classroom performance to being on the Beast stage. And also, like, Lloyd Knight, if you've been watching it or if you have, you're aware of who's performing, it carries this sort of pressure, whether it's real or not, on the performer. And I just totally caved under the pressure. I was like, I don't belong here. This is terrifying. I'm going to screw up. And actually, my first show on Lloyd Knight, I didn't say a single word.
No way.
I stood on the back line. I like held the curtain. And then I was like, oh, you know, someone's like, oh, no one will remember this. And then years later, someone's like, I remember that show. You didn't say a word. So it was a rough start.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people feel, like, really nervous. Is there any information you can get or any, like, advice you can give them besides just, like, time?
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, the number one thing is time, because I remember getting the advice from people, oh, just be confident. And I think that's never going to work, because then you start getting into a spiral. I'd assume if you're like me, you get in a spiral of like, well, why am I not confident? Like, how do I become confident? I think it's time. And I also think the more you're just watching shows and seeing shows of all quality and not putting yourself to a crazy standard, it'll be better. Because I think sometimes there's like this perfectionist idea in your head of like, oh, if I, you know, I'm going to screw it up, I'm going to make things bad. But you see enough shows where you're like, I have a great team. I'm not up there alone. Everyone will make things work. So just trying things and knowing and trusting that your team will have your back, I think is a big thing.
Totally. I've felt that way, too. Like, the more I could trust in my teammates, the, like, better I became.
Yeah.
I just was, like, the more interested I was in my teammates, the, like, better I became, right?
Exactly. Like, gets you out of your own head when you're like, oh, if nothing else, I can set up this person and get off stage and help the scene and get off stage. Like, I just want to do things that'll move the scene forward. If I'm not getting a laugh, that's totally fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in the beginning, I was so focused on laughs, right?
Yeah.
I was like, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But I feel like once I let go of that, which was just time, then I became better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you went through the classes very slow. Was there any, like, class that stuck out that really helped you, or any moment where you were like, oh, I'm kind of, this is all clicking in
a way? I went, so after going through 101 to 401, I was in an ASH with Abra Tabak, which was such a fun concept. We would dance as our opening.
Oh, I think I remember this class.
It was really fun, and it just made you, first of all, you were just physical, which, you know, some openings you stand and talk, and then you get into the scenes, and you're like, oh, there's literally no physical thing to bring into this. This, you were moving, and it was just coming from, like, a place of joy and moving, which was really fun. And the second thing was, like, Abra gave us all feedback that was so specific and right that I think it changed the way I do improv.
Wow.
I mean, there was a scene I'll never forget where I was saying to my scene partner, and I was a straight person, I kept going, seriously, seriously? And she was like, you know, Chaney, I think you're saying that to the person in the scene. Like, they're not seeing what you want them to see. So you need to stop saying seriously and find a way to love what they do and cut that word out of your vocabulary to see. I was like, oh, wow, that's accurate. Like, I had been for four class levels going through just telling my scene partner, like, seriously, is this what you're doing? And it's, like, not fun at all.
Right.
You know, the crazy person doesn't want to have to keep justifying themselves. You're supposed to just set them up and support them.
Right.
And so for me, that was a big breakthrough. I was like, okay. Have fun.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so interesting. So yeah. So then did you take class? You took classes, I'm sure, after that class.
Yeah, I took class after that. One that was really fun was the musical. And I don't have a good voice. And I was with all these people that were, like, such good singers. And it was so, so fun and joyful. Like, musical improv isn't something I ever thought I would do. And then when I did it, I was like, oh, this is just the most fun you can have as a person. So that was great. And I took an ASP with Brian Foss called Brunch. That was so, so fun. Yeah, because we did like a living room opening where you just talk and the people are so funny. So sometimes in improv, I'm just like, oh, I just want to hear this person for the rest of the scene, just the real person because they're so funny. So that was great too.
That's great. So I'm so interested in musical improv. I love it.
Yeah.
But how do you think it's like helped your long form comedian styling? It's like, how has musical improv shaped you as an improviser? Because I've done jams and stuff, but I've never like actually taken a class. But I love it. And I love watching it.
It's really fun. I think in terms of like the way I've done them with a team called Baby Grand that I'm on and the musical class was we tried to fit it into a structure that was like a big arc where things were sort of there's like two storylines where we had the A plot and the B plot and in the end they would sort of meet.
Okay.
And I think that was really helpful because it forces you to make connections and the really good people in the class can come up with musical themes and bring those together. But it just, when you see at the end of the show how things tie together, it's so satisfying for the audience. And that's something that I have been trying to do in the long form that I do too, which is just really hard. That's like such a hard thing to do. But to find themes and tie things back in and do callbacks and like have things wrap up because the audience just goes crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And you think that's easier in musical improv?
I think so because in a Harold, you're juggling so many different parts and you're trying to keep track of so many things. I always just forget most of what I'm supposed to remember. So I feel like when it's in a musical, there's like a lot more emotion and there's a lot more specifics that you remember and then you can bring it back together.
Right.
You know?
And like when I remember even like growing up, I used to put things into song.
Yeah.
To like remember them.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
That's probably like an easier aspect. I forget stuff all the time too.
Exactly.
It blows my mind when some people on my team have a callback and I'm like, oh my God.
Me too. Or when I blow it and I'm like, oh, I didn't know what you were calling back and I just said something else. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were on, how long were you on Lloyd Knight for?
I was on for 2.5 years.
Okay.
Which is a longer time. Yeah. I don't think they do that anymore.
Yeah, that's a long time. But I'm wondering, like, how was the transition going from the B stage to the Chelsea stage?
Oh, it's so interesting. I mean, you hear a lot about it. Like, I'd heard about it, but I didn't really get it till I did it. Because the B stage is really, really small compared to Chelsea. And the audience is so – most people are so far back – and you can't hear the laughs, and I'm not even sure, like, they can sometimes see you. So the benefit of that was that you work in this space where you, like, you make it work. But then you go to Chelsea, and after that long there, it's like, oh, my God, we have so much room. We can run around. We can be physical. There's right, you're right there with the audience. You can look them all in the eye. You can bring the lights up and, like, talk to them. So that was really exciting, and the energy is really different. They're both great, and they both have their – benefits, but going to Chelsea, I felt like, oh, we're like kind of free. Like we can actually do cartwheels and stuff. Like anything's, you know, we could do anything we want.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just like such different setups structurally.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's what I said. I was like, it's just totally, it's like a different game. It's like a whole different world.
Exactly.
So you were on Musk for 6 months, and what Lloyd team do you think, like, was your most influential?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they all influenced me in different ways. I think Musk influenced me a lot because that was my first team, and the people on my team were really great about immediately going, okay, we have to pick a a coach and a practice time and all these things where it's like if I were on a team maybe with all new people, it would have been a little more scrambled. It was like really great just to see, oh, we can run an efficient team and we can all get along and like just get it done because there was no tension. It was just like, let's just do it. Okay, great, everyone on board. And I think that was seeing how that worked helped inform like how to be a teammate on later teams. And I also, I think, which was really fun because there was a much bigger energy on that team.
Yeah, I remember.
We had Mike Helton and we had Joe Firestone and Jesse Jalas, like, and Pat Regan, like big, funny people where I feel like I was like just in awe of their capabilities as like energetic performers.
Yeah.
And then on Lisa from school, that was really great because I had never played with some of the people on that team. Like, it's weird because at that point, after you've been doing this for so long, you've played with most people. But I was still like, oh, my God, I can still play with people I've never even met before. It was so great. And everyone on that team was great. Like, everyone was so nice. And I felt like, you know, that was a team where we could be free to try anything, which was really awesome. And then Sleuth is like, I mean, I've really lucked out. Sleuth's great. Like, the people on that are all so nice and funny and cool and easygoing. So I feel like I've really hit the jackpot with teams.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah, I remember Witch really well. Like, one of my favorite Lloyd teams. And I was always just so jealous of how much fun it looked like you guys were having on stage.
Yeah, it was always, like, a little chaotic, but it was a fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. So, so you say this, and I was just, this is, like, very interesting to me. When you get put on a team, always people are like, how did the teams get formed? And you kind of just get thrown on a team.
Thrown on a team.
Right? You don't pick your teammates, things like that. So what have been, like, the most challenging and also rewarding parts of being thrown on a team that you don't know the performers?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the best part about it is that because you don't have a choice, you can think like, oh, I was put on this team for a reason, and there's a reason why this team exists. So there's something that Shannon saw. There's something that she saw in us as a group. And that's exciting to know that it's not a popularity contest. It's like, oh, there's a vision for how this group could work and my role in it. Like, that's really liberating in a way. Instead of you form your own team and you're responsible for what it is, it's like, okay, we're all going to figure this out together. Like, it's you're figuring out a puzzle of how we work together. The downside is, I think, it's just you have to – there's a quick learning curve of figuring out people's improvisational styles and how they work as a group and how they deal with the stuff that comes up. Like, you do have to immediately decide on a coach and decide on a night to practice. And for some teams, you spend the whole time you're a team still talking about that and debating it and changing your mind, and it's never settled. And some other teams, it's like, okay, just go and this is it and sure, let's all go along with it. And – you know, then there's in between. So I think that's been really interesting is just to see now that I've been on four teams how that varies so much. And in different teams, I've taken more leadership and less given like how much other people are taking on. So it's been really good in terms of just figuring out how you fit into a group and trying to make things as smooth as possible.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I've been on four. Yeah, I've been on four teams as well. And it's just, it's different.
It's
every
different.
Time is very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to, like, back up. So did you always know you wanted to get into comedy?
That's a good question. I think in retrospect, secretly I did. But it was never something that I was, like, allowed to want to do.
Okay.
And so, I mean, growing up, like, I had, maybe I wouldn't now. Maybe I would. I don't know. I had a Sweet 16 that was Jimmy Fallon themed.
Oh, my God.
He was like, I was obsessed with him. I was obsessed with Tina Fey. I used to read SNL transcripts for fun.
Cool.
Just a lot, like, lame, cool things like that. And
cool.
Yeah, exactly. I was always a big comedy nerd and a big, like, you know, I watched so much TV growing up. So I always loved comedy. And then when it came time to see that as a career, I was like, oh, that's not possible. People don't do that. Who makes money off it? Or I thought, if you have, you know, if your dad works in Hollywood or if you grew up in LA, maybe that's how it goes. But for, like, regular old Jane, no. So I didn't really see that as a possibility.
Which is so interesting because you're from Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I would think is like LA. It's like even better than LA when it comes to comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Growing up, I was like, Chicago's the hub. That's the comedy hub. But
I think, I was like totally removed from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. And then in college, I think it was all like, you know, I'm going to pick a practical route. And then after college, I worked in advertising full time for like 5 years.
Wow.
And at a certain point, I realized I wanted to do comedy. That was, okay, it's time. This is the day job stuff isn't making me happy anymore. I'm going to go freelance. And then I made like a 6-month plan to get out of the day job and save up money and, you know, figure out what I was going to do and if I was really ready. And then when I quit, I have been freelancing ever since. But it's pretty relatively new. Like, the comedy as my full-time pursuit thing is only less than 2 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so when you – what drew you to take – I guess that Pangea's show drew you to take classes here?
Yeah. But I had heard of UCB because of the TV show.
Okay.
And I knew, like, Amy Poehler, and I knew, you know, people come from there. But I didn't really get what the theater was at all. And then when I came to that show, I was like, oh, my God, this is so good. I have to do stuff here.
So then you signed up for improv classes here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then so then did you fall in love with improv right away, or was that a gradual thing as well?
I did. It really excited me more than any other thing I tried, and I felt like it came more naturally to me, and it rewarded a bit of, like, I don't know. For part of it, honestly, I felt like this is going to sound crazy, but, like, it felt really therapeutic for me. Like, there's some things you do where you're like, oh, this is a lot of work, and I'm really thinking this through, and oy. And this was more like, oh, like, I feel better after I do it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the thing I followed, where it's like, this makes me feel joyful, and I'm not thinking too much, and I'm having a good time, and I was liking the people I was meeting, and the teachers were great. And I was like, oh, just keep doing this. This is really fun. So I didn't really know much about the, you know, UCB, like, the system or the classes or the auditions or what the teams were. I didn't know any of that. So I was like, I have a sketch background. I'm going to take improv classes. Maybe someday I'll audition for Mod Night. I had no idea what I was doing. And then actually when I was in a class, I got an invite-only audition when I wasn't going to audition to be on Lloyd. And I got on from that. I had no thought in my head that I would be an improviser. But I loved it. I just didn't think that was realistic for me.
So you got an invite-only invitation, went to that, and then you got on?
Yeah.
From your first audition?
Yeah, and there was no callback.
Wow.
I really lucked out. I think that's what made me nervous, too, when I was on Lloyd, was that I was like, they haven't vetted me. I think this is a mistake.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to be on this
team. Well, I'm sure it wasn't a mistake. But that's incredible.
I mean,
you know people who audition 5-6 times.
And I admire that. I feel like I have such a weak constitution that if I were to get, you know, told I have to audition again, I don't know if I would do it.
Wow, that's amazing.
So,
well, so you got on and from your first audition, which is incredible.
Yeah.
As people heard from the last podcast, I did not.
Mm. How many did it take you?
Well, I didn't get on for my first audition, and then they called me 2 months later, which
was
crazy.
Oh, okay.
Which is crazy, but it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So when you got the call
that
you were on the team, like, were you just like, this is nothing I've ever imagined?
Yeah, it really was. I was at work, and I was in a meeting, and I saw that I had a voicemail, and I just, like, literally walked out of the meeting.
Yeah.
I was so happy.
Wow.
I couldn't sit still. It was amazing. And I just remember it. I cried, and I was just like, this is how? This is crazy.
Yeah. That's amazing. So do you think, like, it was a good thing for you to be on Lloyd and, like, incubated for that amount of time before you got on Harold? Or did you feel ready sooner? Or
I appreciated being on for as long as I was. I was grateful. Every time cuts came around, I was like, oh, just please give me some more time. I love it, and I want to get better, and if you just give me more time, I promise I'll work hard. So the more that I was going through these cycles, it was like anxiety ridden, but I was just like, I can feel myself getting better. I really want this. I don't want to be cut, or at least I don't even care if I make it on Harold. I just, like, want to keep doing improv. And at a certain point, I was seeing, you know, a lot of, like, the people I came up with get moved up, and at a certain point I was like, oh no, I'm ready. And that's, I think, what finally, like, switched me into the mode where I was ready, where I just, like, decided that I was ready.
No, that's great. Yeah. So what, like, what does that mean? I guess for, like, people listening, like, when you say I'm ready, like, what does that mean?
I think for me, it was like I was making a lot of moves on Lloyd Knight for a long time that I think in retrospect were just too cautious and I wasn't making big choices and I was playing it really safe. And I think when I decided that I was like, ugh, whatever, I've been on this for so long, you know, I don't care anymore kind of thing, then I started making bigger choices and I was a little crazier. And I think that is what accelerated my improv at that point, where I was finally like, when you can say a bit like, I don't care what I care what my teammates think, but like I'm not trying to make the audience laugh. I'm just like gonna do whatever. Then I think that's liberating when you're not like overthinking everything.
Right. And you're like, I think what you're saying is you're like pulling more from what you find funny and joyous rather than trying to tailor.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Because so much of being on a team is figuring out what your voice is. And I know that sounds cliche, but I don't know if I would have found it had I not been on Lloyd Knight, because it gave me so much time to come to that conclusion, which is like, what do I find funny? And just doing that over and over and over. And then you're like, oh, I see that there's some things that like I offer that are specific to my point of view. Okay, now I see. Like, it took me that long kind of to see it.
Cool.
Yeah.
And do you think you like got that, your voice, like, how long into it do you think you like, found
like
your voice?
A really long time. Maybe. Yeah. And maybe I don't know it yet. And maybe I've become a parody of myself, but those are all the fears. but I think, yeah, like took like, it honestly probably took like 2.5 years or something on that team, on the teams to figure it out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it takes a while to find your voice.
It does.
And
yeah,
there's nothing to be said except for like time is a like huge thing. And I remember people telling me that, and I was like, ugh, that's so annoying. I'm ready.
Yeah,
but it does. It takes time, right? It takes just a lot of experience.
Yeah.
That's great. So how long has Sleuth been a team?
We've been together for almost a year now.
Almost a year.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And so how have you grown as an improviser on Sleuth?
Oh, I've grown so much. They're such a supportive, fun, wonderful team. And every single person is just so, they jump on every idea and support it. And there's no like, there's no ego at all in any of the players. So I think I've grown just by feeling like I'm really 1/8 of this team and that they have my back fully and I have theirs. And I think that's like liberated a lot of improv, at least for me, that I don't have to worry at all with them. Like I just feel like I'm free to do whatever and they'll have my back, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing about like being on Harold Knight is everyone's so talented. You're like, oh, it's going to be fine.
Exactly. It's going to be fine. And honestly, the stakes feel lower because when you're on Lloyd Knight, you're thinking about Harold and when am I going to get on and am I going to get cut? And then, you know, you have those thoughts when you're on Harold of like, what am I doing? What's going to happen? But once the trying to like game the system in your head, whether or not that's real, like, there's no system, it just happens. Once that's gone, you're like, oh, we just support each other. We're just having fun. There's no reason to, like, try to win something.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. It's so interesting. I think we're, like, we're different improvisers. Like, what you were saying was what it took was, like, getting out of yourself and, like, making big moves. And for me, it was, like, dialing that back.
Oh, really?
Like, I definitely think I was, like, a heavy hitter. And then I think I was, like, okay, you're hitting too hard.
Oh, interesting.
It's, like, interesting to just, like, see the types of improvisers that come in. Like, I remember swinging real big on my first show.
Did it go well?
It went well, yeah. It went well. But it definitely was, like, less thinking supportively. And the more I've, like, cared about my teammates and, like, what their ideas are, the better improviser I've become.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, the top improvisers you see are, they take big swings, but, like, there is that level, too, where they do, like, check themselves. I feel like it always ends up being about how they play as a team.
Yeah,
and
totally.
And there's no one on a weekend team who's hiding on the back wall, that's for sure.
Right, yeah, yeah. But that takes time, right?
Yeah.
And finding your voice. Do you coach a lot of improv?
I do sometimes. Sometimes scheduling, it's hard, but I really love it. And there have been some teams I've coached over time that it's really fun. I love doing it.
Yeah. What is, like, your main thing that you're trying to coach, like, when you coach teams?
Like, in terms of a theme, I'm...
Or, like, improv, like, what's your, like, main philosophy behind, like...
Oh, interesting.
Improv.
So, actually, I stole a philosophy from Sean Diston.
Okay, great.
And he once said that we get very obsessed with yes and in improv, but really it should be about 90% yes and 10% and. So instead of going yes and then adding a million details and going to crazy town, which we always do, It's like, how hard can I support and confirm and repeat what this person just said? And then maybe add like a sprinkle or like a little bit of information, a little bit, just because it'll help. First of all, it's just inherently funny when people agree on something, even if it's absurd. I don't know why two people agreeing is just funny. And then as a team, you build slowly. Because what I kept experiencing is like, okay, you yes, and then you and. So like I'm under pressure as your teammate if you say something to come up with something crazy too. Okay, now it's we're on a boat. Yes, and we're also like in space. No. Like yes, we are on a boat. We're on a boat. I don't know how we got on this boat. Like it doesn't have to be this crazy thing. So I love that. So when I coach teams, that's something really big I try to do is slow it down and be like, whatever the first line said is probably could propel the scene. Like, that's probably it. And people rush past that first line and slow down, just yes and, but mostly yes.
Yeah, that is so interesting. That I think I've been coaching a lot and not knowing how to say that.
Ah, it's a good way to say it, right?
It's great to say like 90% yes and 10% and. Because it does go to crazy town very fast.
Yes, yes. If it's mostly and, then you just keep building and building and building, and then you forget even what someone said before.
Yeah, you blow past the first unusual thing. Almost always when I'm coaching now, I see teams blow past the first unusual thing.
Yeah, and doesn't it feel good as a teammate when you say something and a teammate hears you and says it and is like, I agree, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, that feels so good.
Right, and there's something so weird about the fact of just yesing, two people saying yes is so funny. I don't know why it's funny either, but it's so funny.
The example Sean gave us in this one practice was so funny because he's like, okay, you are going to say that you are a dog catcher. Now, everyone else is going to go around and say the same thing in a different way. So someone was like, I'm a dog catcher. The next person's like, I find dogs and I catch them. And the third person's like, canines? You know, the dog? Okay, so when I see them, I put them in an... And we could do this for 20 minutes and we were laughing every time. I don't know why that's
getting
funny.
Like more specific but saying the exact same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very funny. Yeah. So you've been on a ton of teams doing heralds for a long time. Mm-hmm. What are your favorite openings?
Oh, good question. I love... Okay, Sleuth was doing flocking for a while. So on board with that. I think it's super fun to come out with a character and everyone touches the same thing, which is really fun to get everyone's point of view, but you're all doing the same thing. So
flocking, just for people who know, it's like...
One person will come out and start and just say something, like say a phrase with a certain posture and a way of saying it that's specific. So they're like a very clear character. And everyone runs out behind them and does the same posture. They stand the same way and they say... They talk as if they're the character as well. So you can add on to what they said. You can, like, confirm what they said and add on a couple more details. But it's basically eight people filling out a character at once.
And right, then like a flock of birds moving from stage pictures.
Exactly. And then someone runs off and starts another one. Everyone follows them. So all of your premises are based on something that came from that. So you might start just as that character, or it might be something funny that was discovered in what you said. But for me, it's super fun to come in with different characters already, like a way of standing even or something like that that gets you out of your own body.
Right. Totally. Yeah. I've never done a flocking, actually.
Oh, you should try.
I know.
You'd be great at it.
It sounds like a really fun form.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself in more of an organic beginning then to your scenes from a flock, or do you find premises?
They're mostly, you can get a first line from them because the lines that the characters say, there's usually a philosophy in there, or there's usually an emotion. There's usually some line you can take that's going to help fuel the scene. So even if it's like a woman who comes out and she's like, I don't have any bags left. Like someone will add to that. If you came out and you started the scene in your first line, I was like, I don't have any bags left. This is probably like the scene partner will know what you're going for, which
right.
is really cool.
Yeah, because you're all like on the same, like you are the same character. So you're
exactly.
all creating that together. That's so cool.
Yeah, it's
so
really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Are there any openings that you really don't like?
Not a fan of Sound of Movement.
Okay.
Are you a fan?
Love.
Okay, great. Okay, here's where this gets interesting. I feel so embarrassed when I do it.
Oh,
and
my God.
I feel
really?
Like a fool. But that's also just because I don't think I'm, like, good at it. Because I think I'm, like, okay, now we're picketing. You know, you, like, run around. You're like, okay, now I'm a bird. Now I'm, okay, but, like, what am I in the scene, you know?
Right. Well, I think you're more of a probably like a, I think I'm more of a physical player.
Yeah.
And you're probably more of like a word player. Like you, yeah. you're better at like talking about premises and philosophies and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm a noodle and I'm going to walk like a noodle.
Isn't it so funny how two people in the scene together can come out from such different places? Like they're both right. And then the way you see it is completely different.
Totally.
It's cool.
So you're not a big fan of Sound of Movement. What do you think of the pattern game?
I liked it. I never was really sure I was doing it right, which is funny about the pattern game is, like, there may be more mystery added to it than is necessary, where it's, like, it's people talk about it being so hard. Maybe it isn't as hard as we think it is. Maybe it is a little simpler. That's what I assumed by the end of 2.5 years on Lloyd Knight. And it can be really fun because you are, like, building on ideas in a way where you're not going to get to these premises otherwise. It's this one opening where you're like, how else would we have come up with this? This is a weird thing to say. But the thing I didn't like about it was that you're standing in a circle and there's that, like, some people are not saying as much. Some people are saying more. It always happens. And you want to feel like you're all building it together. And sometimes I was just like, oh, I can tell that some people are not feeling this, like not there, and some people are. And then so people have two different ideas of what we're doing. So right. It's hard to get on the same page with that opening.
Yeah, because yeah. It's like very much like word, word, word. Yeah. But what page are we like? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree. That's true. I think when someone told me like put emotion behind what you're saying,
yeah,
that was really helpful for me.
It's so helpful. And then it also helps in the scenes because you bring out something much clearer.
Right.
So there's a lot of times in pattern game where a premise or an idea splits into two, and then you're like, oh, shoot, I don't know if I initiated if this person would know if it's this one or that one. Or if they initiated to me, I don't know what they want me to do. But if you have more of an emotion or there's more specificity around it, it's easier to initiate. It's clearer when you go into the scenes.
Right, yeah. Totally. Yeah, that's interesting. So I am a student. I'm coming to Harold Knight. I'm loving it, right? I'm like, oh, God, I want to be like them, right?
Yeah.
What is your best advice for, like, a new student coming in who's, like, just, like, really wants to be the best improviser they can be? Like, what is your advice?
That's great. I think, first of all, that attitude is going to get you far, young person, just wanting to do better and also having that open mind because I think it's different for everyone and the path to feeling like, you know, a successful improviser or someone who's, like, reached an improv milestone is so different. I mean, the more you hear this podcast, the more you know that's true. But I think the main things are, like, have an open mind in class. And the worst thing you could probably do is sit there and go, this person's bad, that person's bad. Like, find some reason why everyone in class is amazing and find ways in class to bring that out of them and support them and have an open mind about that teacher because I think, I mean, my experience is that all my teachers have been completely right and great, and I almost wish they were, like, harder on me because the advice they gave me was so good. And if you don't agree with something that they say, like, that's okay, but you can just try it out. Just have an open mind. The other thing I think is just, like, go see shows, not even just at UCB, but everywhere. Go see plays and movies and, like, be a knowledgeable, well-rounded person and don't get too invested in the social aspect of UCB because it's great, but I think coming into improv and having a diversity of interests and background and friends is really helpful.
Yeah. So how often do you think you pull from, like, Janie? When you're, like, playing characters and you're, like, doing improv, like, how often do you pull from, like, your life?
I think, like, 100%,
which
is a problem.
No, I love that.
It's unfortunate that I feel like I wish I had more diverse life experience. Like, I wish I had more jobs. I wish I had worked on a farm. I wish I knew more specifics about comic books. Like, these are all things where I feel limited. And had I gone and been like, and I could still do this, but I don't like comic books, sorry. But if I were like, you know, I feel like most of the things I do are either it's like people I know or things that I've experienced or a specific type of person I've seen before, like archetypes that exist in my life or like what I've seen. And I need to stop making job interviews set at ad agencies because I don't know how other jobs work. That's a problem.
Right. But it's great. I mean, those always come out good, I think.
That's true because then you're saying things that are real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's like – a huge testament to why you're such a good improviser is because you pull from, like, real places and what you know. I try and teach that the most.
Oh, really?
I think, like, yeah, I'm always like, pull from what you know.
Yeah.
Because when we pull from what we don't know, it seems so disconnected.
It's so true. And it's so impressive when you see someone pulling from what they know and you're like, I didn't know that person knew that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I know. It's, like, crazy. I don't know. Some people also never come from, like, a philosophy, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're just coming into scenes with, like, oh, this is a weird thing. And it's like, okay, but you can't sustain that.
That's not enough. Yeah, exactly. Like, right. What's the full picture of it? Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
So are you still – who's your coach on Sleuth now?
So Jonna has been our coach.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and she's great. And honestly, it's so funny. Like, there have been – I mean, I don't want to be shady. Like, there's so – I've been on teams where, like, you couldn't nail down the coach or time the whole time we were on a team.
Right.
And so it's been great to have consistency and feel like she comes to our shows. She knows them. It's been awesome. Yeah.
That's great. So what are you guys working on as a team right now?
We're changing our opening, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. So no more flocking.
No more flocking. Which I think is good. Like, I don't know how you feel, but I like changing up the opening because sometimes it gets stale and it just feels like you want to build and – try new things with a team. So we're doing event day now.
Oh, cool.
Which is really fun. I love mono scenes, so it has that element where, like, everyone comes out, you fill out a world, and you have a scene with, like, big, crazy character choices. Everyone can – you can gift each other or come on with something. And then you do the Herald based on the characters and the specifics from that opening scene. And then for the third beats, you bring them back to that original scene, knowing what you know from the Herald.
Right. So I guess then your heralds are becoming more, like, thematic and, like, connected, right?
Yeah, that's been really fun with Sleuth, too. We've been trying to do that. There was one where we had a crazy show where we had first beats and then by – I think it was, like, the first group game we went thematic, which was maybe too early because then we didn't know how to get out of it, and we spent the rest of the show – trying to get out of it. At one point, I literally said in the show, like, we don't know how to get out of this. So we kind of overdid it. But we were like, yeah, we got a taste of that. We were like, we got to do more of that. So we try to do thematic stuff, and it's been really fun to experiment with it.
So that's so interesting because for me, the event day feels like you've set the theme and what it has to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And then to build from that, where it's sort of like a Herald has always been, for me, like, the first three scenes are the building blocks,
uh-huh.
And you don't have, and you're just pulling premise from the opening. But this, you're like pulling theme and, like,
yeah,
real, like it. We have to come back to the event, at
yeah,
the end, right?
And it has to, like, build, which is funny. You can have a really high stakes, high energy opening scene, and then at the end, you want to make it more interesting or bigger or more, like, compelling somehow,
right?
And that can be. That seems like it's tough. Like, we just started it, so I'm curious to see what happens. But I feel like with Sleuth we can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have you how many shows have you done with the event?
None?
Oh, so it's brand new.
Brand new.
So exciting. Are you guys doing one tonight?
Yeah.
I don't know when this is coming out. But,
I don't know.
But that's really fun.
Yeah,
that's
excited.
So fun.
That'll be good.
And are you guys thinking about shakeups or anything like that?
I think so, but also, like, I don't know how you feel, but after you've been on teams for a bit, you're just kind of like, whatever happens, which is, I don't know. I really hope we stay together. I love Sleuth so much. I also realize that all this stuff is impermanent and fun, and it makes you feel lucky to have the chance to be on a team at all and, like, have a chance to be with the people you're with. So shakeups used to freak me out, and now it's a bit like, oh, I'm just so grateful today we're a team. I'm grateful that we get to be on stage right now. I don't know what's going to happen, but what a great time we're having in this moment.
That's a great attitude to have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so. I think we can get so caught up in the cutting and the moving teams and all that kind of stuff that, like, I think sometimes people don't take a second to just be like, wow.
Yeah, really this is great. And it's also really fun. And, like, regardless of whatever status is perceived about being on Herald Night or if it's, you know, something that people think, like, they need to do. I just feel grateful that I get to every Monday night I'm with seven really funny people who make me laugh no matter how my day was, and I get that chance to just, like, laugh with them. So that's what I would miss, you know, because, like, honestly, Herald Night, you don't, like, make money.
There's right.
not really anything else to get from it.
Right. Yeah.
It's stage time and time with your friends.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. It's, it's, you gotta love it.
You gotta love it.
Because if you don't, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah. So what's been the biggest thing that's changed from, like, new trainee coming in, I'm a new improviser, to, like, I'm on Herald Night. This is this, like, what's the biggest change as an improviser that you feel like you've come through?
Yeah. I think the big change has just been trust in that everything will be okay instead of trying to control things or make it work, like, this way. And I have this idea and, oh, no, like, how do I fix it? I just learned to be like, I think I'm going to go along with it a little better. And maybe I can add, or maybe it's best if I just stand back and let it happen and, like, see how I can add or just go jump in on the crazy too. So I think that's been really good. And I think another thing that's been great is a bit of, like, a fuck it attitude that comes along with just being on a team for that long. You're like, what is the worst that could happen, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And you think that's just time?
I think it's time. Yeah. I think it's time and supportive teammates and
right.
knowing that. And also, like, probably life experience, too. Because I do think this is going to sound rude. I think being on a team is amazing and it's great. If it's your one goal or if it's the one thing that you care about, that, like, I have to be on Herald Night, I think that is a recipe for kind of, like, bad improv sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think you have to have other stuff that you care about. I feel like doing comedy and doing more of it outside of improv too has helped, just because I'm like, oh, there's like a million things. It's not just this. There's yeah. so much pressure on it. And then you're like, oh, but that's just like one thing. It's great, but it's just one thing.
Right.
You know?
Totally. I think, like, and that also took me time. I mean, there was so long where I was like, it's everything for me to get on a Lloyd team. Like,
yeah.
God, I just want that. But once you get it, it's amazing. I am so grateful all the time. But it's like, I think what makes us good comedians is we're never satisfied. And we're always like, okay, what next?
What's next? What's next? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And then you get on Herald Night and you're like, okay, this is great. So, like, what's next?
Exactly.
Well, that's great. So I'm just interested in, like if there was any, like, big failure moment.
Okay.
Where you were like, oh, I did that, like, shaped you as an improviser.
I think the first show where I was clinging that back wall was informative because it was terrifying for me. And then it was on top of that terrifying to go, oh, my God, everybody saw me fail and everybody saw me do that. And then the fact that I got back up on stage again after that when I was like, oh, my God, because between, you know, Lloyd and I, you have 2 weeks.
Right.
So I remember that happened. I was like, my team hates me.
Oh, gosh.
I looked so weird. Everyone was probably making fun of me, and then I had 2 weeks before, like, the pressure to build. Okay, I'm going to get out in the scene. I'm going to do something. And I think that failure and then getting back on stage after how anxious that made me was, like, a good moment. I think that I learned, like, you know, put less pressure on yourself. Just,
yeah.
like, go up there and don't try to, like, do something specific. Just be normal. So that was really helpful just to get through that and just to keep going and be like, oh, I must really like this. If, like, I'm having anxiety about this and I keep going back, this is something I really like.
Did you remember your show after that? Do you remember the next show you had?
I don't remember. I remember I got out and I was – I don't think I did good. But I didn't shine, which would have been an amazing story. But it I was just, like, proud to have spoken. And
right, which I think is an accomplishment in its own, right?
Yeah, because it's like, you know, I think that was – the failure for me was just the fact that I wasn't trying. I was trying, but, like, I was too in my head. I was too anxious, and I was just, like, not doing it. I was all caught up in my own stuff. And I think that was really informative because the less I got of that, the more I was having a better time and doing a better job, you know?
Yeah.
And I also think, like, this may be not good advice, but there have been personal failures where I have felt on stage I participated in a scene in the not smartest way when I didn't really think the topic was handled properly, like a sensitive topic.
Okay.
And there have been scenes that I've regretted where, like, I felt like, you know, there's certain topics that are so hard to do. And not that people shouldn't, but in improv, they come up. And, you know, I don't want to, like, list them. But, like, there's certain things where you're like, oh, this is heavy. And sometimes in improv, as it happens, they get treated not as heavy as they are because you're doing a comedy show.
Right.
But as someone who has, like, been in the audience and seen that and experienced a bit of, like, oh, I came to a comedy show to get away from my problems and then now it's on stage, it's not being taken seriously, I feel like I was in a couple scenes where that stuff wasn't taken seriously. And I like, talked to, you know, the coach after, and in one case, I talked to the teacher after. And I think the thing I learned from that was, like, the most important thing to me sometimes is that if we that stuff comes up that I do right by people in the audience, I think, who are affected by this thing, and figure out a way to make it work, or, like, not at the cost of the team, but, like, help the show and not have this happen. Because I actually, like, was plagued with, like, regret after a couple shows where I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I was in that scene. Like, that wasn't okay. And then realizing that as an improviser, I can, first of all, take responsibility and talk to my team about it and, like, let them know how I feel and assume that other people feel the same way and maybe aren't saying anything. And then, two, like, you don't have to be in a scene and you don't have to play a thing that makes you uncomfortable or makes you feel sad. Like, that's not the point. And when I sort of drew a line in the sand in my head of, like, if that's happening, I'm not going to partake, then I think that also made me a little stronger as an improviser because I felt, like, more empowered to steer things a little bit, if that makes sense.
Well, if so if a topic comes up that seems heavy,
yeah,
like, how as an improviser do you handle that?
There's a couple ways I've gotten advice from coaches on this, and I think one is, like, you always, if it's just a personal thing, you have the option to just not be in the scene, which isn't, it's not unsupportive to your teammates. It's just saying, like, I wouldn't add to this. Like, it's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
The other option is to, like, comment on it. Like, if something is treated flippantly, like, to call that out and
right.
to be like, that's crazy that you would treat it this way. This is a really serious thing. And then try to steer it to a sort of meta conversation where you're like, okay, we're going to move on. But, like, I'm going to acknowledge that.
Right.
Because I think the hard thing is when you want to be a supportive teammate and you want to be on board and support them, but you don't want to call people out on, like, all the time. But what do you do when you're, like, seeing it through the audience's eyes and you're like, oh, this is a topic that, you know?
Right. Totally.
So, yeah.
I think that's, like, such good advice to, like, point out maybe the, like, lightheartedness or the flippancy to what's happening in the scene. Because I find myself in those scenes all the time, too. And sometimes, and I also think, like, I have to be forgiving of myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because I can't always do the right thing on stage. It's such
true.
Like
and it's improv. Like, you can't control it. You can't write it. And
right.
you don't have the right answer, you know?
Right.
And it's going to happen. So I feel like that might make me a buzzkill sometimes on teams.
No.
But
no,
I'm
no.
like, you know, I'm always interested in ways to figure that out. And I agree. It's like calling it out, not being rude about it, but just, like, acknowledging and giving a nod to the audience and being like, we see what's happening. The optics of this are clear and, like, we get it. We know, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, is there anything else, like, that you would want to say before we get out of here, like, that's, like, really the, like, your core, like, your philosophy of improv or something you want to give, like, the listeners?
Oh, wow.
I think that's a very broad question.
I love it. I think the main thing, too, I see, just thinking about coaching on a personal level, like, I just, people are so, there's so much talent, there's so many funny people that I see, and I think, like, it's great when I see people who, in a scene, really commit and, like, put emotion in it and really care. And yeah. I get so excited when I see that, and I think, like, if you're going to practice and you're putting in the time and you're spending the money and you got the coach, just, like, have fun and, like, give it your all because you're there. Just, like, do it. Don't pull at me. Don't stand on the back line.
Yeah.
Just go do it. It's fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about commitment.
Yeah.
Just in general to, like, your art form and your work.
Exactly.
That's what I think you're saying. And it is really beautiful to watch someone be that committed in a scene. Like, even if it's not funny, I'm so much more engaged. I'm like,
exactly.
I'm like locked in.
That's the thing. You've done that exercise, I'm sure, where it's like, it doesn't matter if people laugh. Just really commit and make this a true scene that feels real. And it's always funny.
Always.
Because if they they care, you care.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Oh, I think that's great. Well, this has been the best.
This has been awesome. Thank you for this amazing experience.
Oh, it was so fun. You're such a delight, Jamie.
You're a delight.
So that was our long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Janie Stoller will be your host.
What?
I know. Can you believe it? This has been a delight. I'm Morgan Miller. And Janie, you have a website.
It's JanieStoller.com.
And plug your Twitter.
Janie Fierce.
And plug your Instagram.
Janie Fierce.
And plug your Facebook. You don't want to plug it?
I don't know if... Well, there's a... It's probably at Facebook.com/JanieStoller. But, like... I mean, that's where my content's popping, but, like, I don't accept random requests.
And there you go. And there you have it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. I've had a blast. And thanks, Janie, for talking with me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.